one of the world's premier aviation and catastrophic injury lawyers, Chicago's own Bob Clifford. He founder and partner of Clifford Law. He has represented victims injured or killed in every major commercial airline crash in the U.S. in the last 4 decades. Bob, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you, Karen. So good to be with you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. So I want to talk a little bit about, first of all, what happened on that fateful day last year. If you can remind our listeners how this crash transpired.
Well, sadly, an American Airlines / PSA regional jet inbound from Wichita, Kansas, was heading to Reagan National, and a normal flight, mid-early evening, still dark outside, but people coming back to town from having visited family elsewhere around the country, and an Army Sikorsky helicopter was in a flight path that directly intersected with the plane, and it ran into the airplane. And the helicopter wasn't where it was supposed to be. The aircraft was on a flight path into a runway that's a very narrow runway that is dangerous. You had a terrible event that occurred, needlessly killing 67 people. There were 60 passengers, 4 crew, and 3 helicopter servicemen that all perished, and the evidence now shows that this was entirely preventable. It should never have occurred, and that there were many people that are responsible for this just terrible tragedy. And we lost mothers, fathers, daughters, children, sisters, brothers, husbands, wives. It's just awful.
When you see these crashes, Bob, I'm sure you, having represented victims over 4 decades, there's something particularly pernicious about getting on an airplane to see your family or go home or go somewhere for a holiday, something that's supposed to be so wonderful and positive that people look forward to, and then have it end in such a needless way. It's got to be just horrible on the victims' families.
Well, it certainly is. Because there are a lot of reasons. It's funny you ask it or say it that way, because over the years I've dealt with a lot of the psychology that goes on with these families, and dealt with their psychologists, their treating psychologists and psychiatrists, and there are some very unique features to air disasters. One of them is, and it's true in a lot of instances, I suppose, but number one, you don't get to say goodbye. And there are just so many things that you could have, would have wanted to say, right? And then in many of these instances, not this one, thank God, but in many of these instances, you don't get a body back. Mm. And that, I'm telling you, that haunts people. I am lead counsel for all the families who perished in the Ethiopian crash back, and it's still going on, back in March of 2019. Where 157 people needlessly died once again in a preventable crash once again. And there, they got back small body parts. That haunts people. But what really haunts people the most, and it's applicable here, is when the families learn that what occurred was preventable, it didn't have to happen. It was somebody or some combination of somebody's not doing their job, not taking the care and safety of people that are entrusted to them seriously. One thing you have to remember about airlines, they are a common carrier, and under the law, this is a law show, they have the highest duty of care obligation, and that's a term of art in our system. Everyone listening to us today, they can't run red lights. They violate the law when they run a red light. Well, guess what? A common carrier violates the law when they run a yellow light. And here it was known, there's been so much attention paid to the helicopter. They were on night vision. They were on a training mission. They were wearing these goggles. Their altimeters weren't working properly. So they didn't really have a good read on their altitude. all those things. And yet there were reportedly afterwards now tens of thousands of near misses that occurred at that airport where the airlines knew about it and they did nothing about it. They didn't train their pilots properly. In fact, they pulled back on training because it puts more, you hear this cliche about, profits over safety from guys like me all the time, but it's true. These people are motivated to capture every nickel and dollar they can for their profit line, and when they don't train their pilots, they're saving money. Well, that particular airport, it's known. It has unique features to it, and if you're going to let pilots go into that particular runway, they have to have special training. And so the airlines here, you have to look at responsibility, and that's what that National Transportation Safety Board hearing was all about. They're looking at responsibility as a ball of 100%. Clearly the Army has a big problem here. Clearly the FAA dropped the ball here in terms of how they manage the air traffic control. But make no doubt about it, when you get on that American Airlines flight, you are giving your life and you're putting your life in their hands, and your expectations are that they will satisfy that obligation, and they failed those people. And they did, and they're still doing it because they haven't changed an awful lot of what's going on over there.
Bob, you mentioned that there were all these near misses. Just how does this work? So if there's an airport that has near misses, are they documented all the time? And and then is there somebody overseeing, hey, near misses aren't good enough? We should be doing better.
There you go. So right now, no lawsuit has been filed. So here's a here's an exclusive for the Karen Conti show, okay? There will be a lawsuit filed in Washington, D.C., and the exact date we haven't picked yet, but it will be a date in the middle of September. And that lawsuit will be against the government, not only in association with the helicopter and the Army. It will be against the FAA and their failures, and it will be against the airlines. And there will be a big focus placed on all three of those elements of what caused this crash, what the probable cause was of this crash. Because the families, a lot of times people say, well, what are the family? What is your goal here? And I can tell you, Karen, after all these years, the families come to me and they say they want two things. They want accountability and they want legacy. And what I mean by accountability, of course, is what by definition is. They want the people who are responsible to either own up to it or to have a jury determine that they are. That's part one. But the legacy part is no one wants their family member to have perished in vain. If I'm going to lose my dad, my daughter, my wife, my husband, I want there to be a lesson learned from that that would make it a safer community for the other U.S., citizens and traveling members of the public. And that's the legacy here. And so the goal of our clients in this filing will be to force change, to force them, if they're not going to do it on their own voluntarily because we're not in the boardroom with them trying to save that money, that we're going to force them to do it through a jury trial. And that's what will happen in September.
So, Bob, when you went to these hearings where the evidence is presented, do you take those findings at the National Transportation Safety Board, do you take those findings or do you do your own investigation? And if you do your own investigation, do you regularly come up with a different conclusion than the government?
No, we typically don't. But what you'll find, the government obligation is incomplete, if you will, from the perspective of what you need in the courtroom. The government, the NTSB charter is to determine the quote-unquote probable cause of the crash. And that can be something that is as silly as saying that, the helicopter was maintained in altitude that was inconsistent with safe flight with an inbound aircraft. How's that for mumbo jumbo? Okay.
Right.
Okay. As opposed to saying what we do in a courtroom, the helicopter pilots, these are the detail of why where they went wrong. Here's the airline pilots and the company. Here's where they went wrong. So those factual materials from the hearing are helpful to us. But we have to engage in what we call discovery. That's where you do deposition work. And we mentioned these thousands and thousands of near misses. Well, we will get all of that information. We will get those reports. And interestingly, we've already set it up, Karen. You're talking about how the law might change with AI and all. That's another show for you. But we'll get all this data. We'll input it into computers, and through AI, we will sift through all of these thousands and thousands of pages of material, and determine the things that are relevant to prevention. And those are the things that will come out of the work of the lawyers over the next 2 to 3 years. Once the lawsuit is up and running.
We're talking to Bob Clifford. He is with Chicago's own Clifford Law Offices. He represents numerous clients in aviation cases and personal injury, medical malpractice, wrongful death. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about these airplane crashes. I know Bob is involved in the Ethiopia crash. And then we're going to talk about medical malpractice and some other relevant issues. We're talking to Bob Clifford. He is an attorney here in Chicago. You may have remembered him. He represented Rachel Barton, the violinist who was very badly injured when she got stuck in a train car. This was many years ago. We're going to get to that, if you remember, and I want to follow up and see how your client is doing, Bob. But let's go back to this airline crash situation. Is it your opinion that we are seeing more near crashes and more crashes in the airline world?
We certainly have for the last several years now, beginning with, 2018. On October 29th of 2018, a Boeing MAX 8 737 crashed in Indonesia, followed by 4 months later, a Boeing MAX 8 737 crashed in Ethiopia. And before that, it was almost a decade before we had any big commercial crash that affected the courts and the U.S. There were things around the world, but not even many then. But all of a sudden, it's been like a run. It's like every other day you're hearing something about doors blowing off of airplanes, about near misses, about engines blowing up or starting on fire, about pilots running into flocks of geese and having emergency delays. So I don't know what it is, Karen, but yes, we are at the moment in the midst of an unprecedented revamp of what it used to be. It was safe. Aviation, they tell you all this all the time. Traveling by airplane is the safest mode of transportation that you can engage in, okay? What they don't tell you is that it's usually fatal, though, if something goes wrong.
That's the truth. Stakes are a little higher, right?
The stakes are a little higher in that. But look, I believe it's safe to fly. I do fly regularly. I fly a lot, too much, frankly. And I don't have a doubt that there are good people out there who are the pilots, or good people out there who are the flight attendants and the service people and the mechanics. But sometimes the equipment just isn't maintained as well as it can or should be. Sometimes these parts wear out. I didn't know this until I got into this business. They will, you buy a car, the things don't last forever, right? But in the aviation world, they'll sell you an engine, and then they'll take a look at the fan disc of the engine, and they'll say, okay, that fan disc is going to last 10 years. And then they take a look at it 2 years later, and they say, it's doing pretty good here. Now let's extend that life to 11 years. Okay, then 4 years later, they look again. They say, this thing's doing really good. Why don't we extend it another 5 years? Well, the next thing you know, they took a product that was designed to last 10 years, and they're putting it into service for 18 years. And that's where they start to get it. That's a very slippery slope. Those kind of things do go on. And look, Karen, it's a truism. We argue in the Boeing cases that Boeing, when they manufactured this aircraft and they had the flaw in their systems on the software, that they basically valued life at zero because they took chances with people's lives. And you know, you can take it, people mentality is you can absorb unending amounts of pain, suffering, and sorrow, provided one thing prevails, and that is it's not about you. It's about somebody else, and it's abstract. But when it hits home, you start thinking about these things differently.
You know, let's talk about this Ethiopia crash. I know you were you were the lead counsel there. And weren't there criminal charges that were brought, or they were supposed to have been brought? And what happened with that? When does
the Trump administration has withdrawn those criminal charges, and it's really an outrageous thing that the families, of course. 346 people died who should not have died, all because of the way Boeing handled the development of the software on that aircraft. And there were criminal charges brought in Texas. There was a deferred prosecution agreement. There was indictments. There were things that occurred down there, a jury trial, where they tried to throw some engineer under the bus, and the jury said no because they knew that it went up into the higher ranks of the company. And then now all of a sudden all the charges have been dropped. It's called a non-prosecution agreement now.
And what does that mean? Can you explain that?
You did something wrong, but we're not going to prosecute you. But you still have to pay these fines, and that's what they've done. They've paid fines. They've changed how they monitor the performance of the manufacturing process. And if you do these things in compliance with this order, then we will not prosecute you. As opposed to if you don't do this work the right way, these ways of changing your business model, the way you oversee and monitor your manufacturing process, if you don't do it according to these strict guidelines, then we will prosecute you. But these are the terms of it. I know that they sound the same and similar, but they are materially different because it's all about business. If you're in a non-prosecution agreement, you can continue to apply for government contracts. Let's not forget that Boeing is one of the largest defense contractors in the world. It's very important to the American economy. And that's what you're seeing unfold there. That the leadership at the DOJ and then the administration has made a decision that Boeing is too important to the American economy and to our defense structure to cripple it by the things they did in this case. They're letting them satisfy their obligations to the family civilly. They're changing some of their business practices and they're moving on. That's what's going on.
Now, Bob, you have done this for a long time. You've reached levels of amazing success. You've gotten literally billions of dollars in verdicts and settlements for your clients over the years. I'm not a personal injury lawyer or an aviation lawyer, but I hear the criticisms, like ambulance chasers and people out capitalizing on injury and all of that. And in my view, and I'm going to let you say it in a much more articulate fashion, I always think of the personal injury lawyers and the lawyers out there doing class action work. They are the ones who are suing the drug companies and the cigarette makers and the asbestos manufacturers and the bad engineers who fly, work on planes. They sue them and they change the world because all of a sudden industry decides it's not really profitable to cut corners anymore and we're going to make changes in our policies. How do you feel that way? Do you feel like you're doing more than just representing your wonderful clients, but you're actually doing things to change the way we operate our companies?
Well, certainly a bit self-serving for me to say yes to that, but the truth is that I do feel that way. I mean, we call it graveyard engineering. The reality is that in many instances that you can point to in America, it is a safer, better place today because, sadly, someone perished and some family with a lawyer willing to suit up and go into court brought to the attention of the justice system a deliberate or inadvertent, but nevertheless defective, a product that was manufactured deliberately in a defective way to cut a corner, or was inadvertently just under-engineered, but somebody died, and as a consequence of that, we are going to force you to change how you do business. Look at automobiles today. You're driving in a very safe car today because someone died. Look at the Pinto and the and all the Corvair. Again, in aviation, I can tell you right now, flying in today is a lot safer than it's been. And why? Because all these people have perished over the last decade, and they've been forced to. You know, you mentioned medical malpractice a bit.
And you know what?
The reality of life is that medicine is safer today in many circles because people died or were badly injured by bad care. It was forced to change because some family went to court and demanded it.
We've been talking about the crash that happened in Washington, but let's pivot a little bit, Bob, and talk about something you brought up in the last segment, which is medical malpractice. I saw some statistic that I wonder if it was actually true, that the Center for, you never know when you Google things these days, Center for Disease Control was asked to correct its records to list medical errors as the third most common cause of death in the United States after heart disease and cancer. I don't know if that stat is still true, but does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me one bit. And as a matter of fact, I don't know, so I do the aviation work, which is a unique in book of business, but my office does do, we're probably one of the larger firms in this community doing medical negligence work, and our intake calls are up dramatically, and I don't understand why. I happen to believe that medicine is far safer today, at least anecdotally for me. I mean, I tell people, for an example, that when I was a young lawyer, the number of cases involving anesthesia errors, was very high. And yet the American College of Anesthesiology did a study nationally of all the cases, and they identified the commonalities of why it was that these cases were happening, and they started to train around them. Well, the number of anesthesia cases dropped like a brick in water. We've seen the same thing in the delivery of babies and the management of babies and in some surgical care. But what we are seeing, though, is a lot of sloppy medicine. You know how to do it the right way. You're trained how to do it the right way, and then you don't do it. Well, that's on the individuals. And so it's not a systemic problem. There are a lot of people out there who are just not taking their jobs seriously. Maybe the medical schools have loosened up on who they've allowed to become doctors. I'm not sure of any of that, but all I do know, I can tell you folks, that we're seeing malpractice claims on the rise, and that's happening across the country. I'm involved in a couple of different lawyer groups, and there are other lawyers across the country who are telling me the same thing anecdotally in their cities.
I want to address the issue of malpractice. We get a lot of calls to the radio show who say, hey, I think I have a medical malpractice case. And in many cases, lawyers just don't take all of them. Can you tell our listeners what the case needs to be about in order for there to be an action?
I think that lawyers are those who are doing it the right way are they doing a particular service to the medical community because they are keeping bad cases or weak cases out of the system. Under the law, you must have an expert witness who's willing to support your claim. I mean, just yesterday, with a very close friend of mine, he had his wife was injured in a medical event, and guess what? We've had multiple experts now look at the records, and they say, Bob, what occurred here could occur to anyone. It's one of the risks of the procedure. There's a bad outcome here, but it's not because of someone who was negligent. It can just happen. And guess what? We're not filing a claim. And this is for someone I know very well and is a close friend. That's the kind of scrutiny that must take place up front. And because, look, it doesn't take rocket scientists to tell you you have a good case if the airplane crashes into the ground or the guy runs a red light. But that's not true for medicine. In medicine, they're very complicated matters, and you have to have qualified experts who are willing to work with the family and an individual to review the file to see if the quality of care met the standard of practice that they were entitled to. And so we reject, Karen, it's an interesting statistic, we reject 18 out of 20 calls that we get. And of the two that we do take, we reject more than half of those after careful scrutiny of the facts. So there is a good system of review that's in place with most lawyers, because I used to hear about these frivolous lawsuits, right? Well, you would have to be a nut as a lawyer to file a frivolous medical malpractice case, because these cases cost tens of thousands of dollars to prosecute. Just a week ago, there was a verdict in a medical malpractice case in Rockford where there was a not guilty, but that doesn't mean that it was a frivolous case. There were qualified experts on both sides of the case. The jury heard the evidence, and the jury sided with the doctor, and so the case is over. But guess what? That lawyer and the family who prosecuted that case spent six figures on the prosecution of depositions and experts and travel and all the things that go into presenting a lawsuit. Well, you'd have to be crazy to file a frivolous case knowing that it was not good and to spend that kind of money and run the gauntlet with a jury and get thrown out of court. So there is a system in place for review. Listen, there are a lot of extraordinarily well-intentioned healthcare providers here in Chicago and the state of Illinois. We get good medical care here, but sometimes people don't do their job, and when they fail you, then there's a civil justice system there to protect you.
And one other thing that I hear a lot is, you know, I know that your firm had a $101 million verdict in a brain damaged baby case in a local suburban hospital. How does a jury arrive at that figure? How, as a lawyer, do you present evidence to a jury to justify that kind of figure?
Well, there's several elements that go into that. One of them is, of course, that what is the cost of any future medical care in the event that the individual is a survivor, and if we're not talking a wrongful death case. So if there's somebody badly injured through a medical misadventure, and now they're living in a handicapped way, what are the costs, care costs for them in the future? That's one element that leads to those numbers, because the cost of future health care can be quite significant. It can be, tens of thousands of dollars. The second element that is sometimes if you have a wage earner. So let's say a 42-year-old woman who's making, $250,000 a year is injured and it's a meritorious case. Well, now you've taken away her livelihood. And so what is the lost earning capacity of that person? That's a big element. That's tens of thousands of dollars at times, hundreds of thousands, millions possibly. That's an element. And then finally, there are what the court and the law calls non-economic damages. And those non-economic damages are the pain and suffering that is associated with an injury. It could be a disability. What is the lack of your ability to engage in the activities of daily living? Do you need help getting navigating life now? Who's going to pay for the cost of that help? And then there are elements of, let's say it's a disfiguring injury. And one of the things we do is jury research that helps inform us on that.
Thank you for all that. I'm sorry, but we're going to have to break now, and we didn't have enough time, so you're going to have to come back. Bob Clifford from Clifford Law Offices, how do people contact you if they would like a consultation?
ClifordLaw.com, www.ClifordLaw.com, or 312-899-9090.
Thank you for joining me, Bob, and have a safe and wonderful Labor Day weekend.
You too, friend.
All right. Take care.